night, and welcome to Cinema Squabble edition number two, or episode number two, as it were. This is a podcast that we've put together a number of Seattle critics who have all gathered around a single table to talk about the films that are coming out in the Seattle area. Also talking about picks in film awards. We've got the SAG Awards to discuss, also Oscar things to discuss. My name is Adam Gerke. Joining me at the table is Sarah Michelle Fetters, Brian the Movie Guy, Brian Zitzelman, and we've got a very special guest who we'll get to in just a moment. But gentlemen and ladies, welcome to the table here.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Mystery guest.
Yeah, mystery guest. First up, talking about films we have seen or coming out this week. Still Alice on the docket here.
Opening Friday in Seattle.
So Sarah, you're seeing opening Friday. Give us the rundown on this, because I myself have not seen this. You have.
Sure. Still Alice is with Julianne Moore. She was just nominated for Best Actress for the film. She plays Alice Howland, a professor.
Well-renowned,
internationally respected. People think she's awesome, and she gets early onset Alzheimer's, and it is how she and her family deal with her descent.
It's a sad movie.
Not an upper.
If you can't tell, it is a sad movie.
Right, yeah. And were it not for Julianne Moore, I'd still be sleeping. Mm. I was a big fan. I thought she was fantastic in the movie. That's why she's got nominated. That's why she's probably going to win, I don't know if we all agree on that, but
she's gonna win.
It's very Lifetime-ish.
Yeah, she's gonna win.
I thought the everything outside of her performance, I really wasn't engaged. I didn't think direction was that memorable. I didn't think many parts of it were that memorable, but she is fantastic. She's done better, but I thought she was good.
What's weird is that both Richard Glatzer and Wash Westmoreland, they've made better films.
Right.
You know, you look at Quinceañera, you look at even The Fluffer, they've made some really thought-provoking, deep, interesting films that take what could be some rather rote material and make it emotionally bracing and really moving. This one, it just...
Do you think this is rote?
I do think it's rote.
I just don't.
Really? Go ahead.
I mean, I think they do a really good job of establishing her with the family. I mean, some of the stuff with the husband, I think, is a little underdeveloped. But, I mean, we haven't talked about... Kristen Stewart's in this movie, and it's kind of the year of Kristen Stewart doing things that
she's
are
terrific
more than
too.
Twilight. She's very terrific. You know, she did Camp X-Ray, which was excellent. And she's the performance as the daughter who's kind of, it's not so much that she's distant, but she isn't particularly close to the Julianne Moore character. And she kind of becomes the caretaker as the movie goes along. And I think she does a really excellent performance. The two have a nice connection, and it develops in a very natural manner. I mean, do you think that stuff's all dull, or are you just kind of... The performance is good, but individual scenes are lacking.
I think individual scenes definitely are lacking in that they just are expected. They go in a way that there are no shocks. There are no surprises. What I will also say, though, is that the movie did interest me enough that I actually went and read Lisa Genova's novel. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about between her and the relationship between Kristen Stewart, it's so rich in the novel. It's so complex. There's so much going on there. And it wouldn't have even added that much more screen time. The movie's what?
It's 100
minutes.
It's a little over 100.
Yeah, but you could have added 10 minutes of material and just fleshed that relationship out just a little bit more, and I think I'd be a little bit more positive towards
it. I mean,
film.
The relationship is there, but it's the Julianne Moore characters. I mean, it's her movie. And
sure.
Yeah, it goes to expected places, but I kind of like that about the movie. She gets Alzheimer's. She doesn't get better. You don't get better. She slowly devolves, and you know, I don't think this is a movie that's going to have particular spoilers. In the end, you know, she doesn't even recognize that she has it. And that slow evolution from somebody who knows a lot to someone who is kind of just out of it and doesn't even recognize that she has the disease is really naturally progressed. I mean, she is fantastic. And I know the dialogue isn't anything particularly poppy. Nobody's going to be quoting anything from it. But it's just really beautifully told. I mean,
That's fair.
I think it's totally fair.
It's good.
Well, and I feel like I'm coming down on the movie a little bit hard because I did enjoy it. My reservations are just so strong that it makes me hard to sit there and give it a full-throated, go see this right now.
I think you should. I mean, Brian, so you're pretty
and
down.
Brian's down.
What
did you think of Kristen Stewart in it?
You know what? I hate her.
Okay.
Every movie she does, I feel like she'd rather be doing something else. Almost every movie.
God.
But I haven't seen Camp X-Ray.
Which she is phenomenal.
Okay, that's fair. And in this, I thought she was very good. I was actually surprised. The relationship and the dialogue and stuff like that, I don't know. It just maybe wasn't my movie. It wasn't awful. I just thought it was pretty slow and pretty just, I kind of knew where it was going to go. But Julianne Moore is fantastic, and Stewart's very good, too.
Okay. So, all right. So, right there, we've heard from all of you guys. What are your thoughts on this? Theater, rent, or skip? Sarah?
Rent.
Brian, the movie guy.
Rent.
Theater.
Brian Zitzelman saying theater. Okay. So, still Alice. We're getting one theater, two rents. All right. Something that most of us, but Brian Zitzelman, you did not get a chance to
see this week. I'm sorry.
Black Sea. Brian, the movie guy, you want to set this up for us?
Yeah. Jude Law. It's a submarine movie. Let's just start there. But Jude Law is a guy that gets laid off from his job, and he finds out through acquaintances that there is a lot of gold at the bottom of the Black Sea. And so he has to put together this ragtag crew to go down there and retrieve said gold. It's pretty simple. Very simple story.
What's the time period of this?
Time period's present day.
It's present.
Yeah,
okay.
Present day. And I tell you what, I haven't... Jude Law is a great actor. Mm-hmm. You know, years ago he was doing the pretty boy thing, but still, you know, talented Mr. Ripley is great in that. He's really changed as an actor, and he is so good in this movie. He's just a totally different character than we've seen him play. And I could have seen... I'd easily see another movie with him as this character or something, like just really interesting stuff that we're not used to seeing him do. The movie, would I put it in my top 10 in terms of submarine movies? I don't know. It might be 11, maybe 9, maybe 10. Mm-hmm. But it was good. He was very good. The movie's very gritty, claustrophobic, obviously. It's this rusty old submarine. What I really liked is they showed how you can run a submarine, this giant, this massive vessel, on a skeleton crew. And I thought that was really interesting to just see, you know, usually in movies you see people doing things and the captain calling out the different commands and people doing stuff and it's just running, right? And there's a ton of people on the ship, on the sub. This one, it was a skeleton crew, perfectly cast. I mean, just a great supporting cast. They didn't delve too deep into those characters, which some of them were pretty interesting, I thought. And I would have liked more of that. But just as like a bare bones, go for the gold, gritty, blue collar, working class sub movie, I thought it was really entertaining. Now, I've seen Black Hat and The Boy Next Door this year, so anything's going to be good. Jude Law eating soup for 2 hours would have been good, but this was actually really entertaining.
Blow to Black Hat.
And you know, what I found particularly interesting about this is in this one, because you're underwater and you're in a sub, and then they do some sort of exploration without giving anything away.
Which is a fantastic sequence, by the way.
Did you find yourself holding your breath at times, kind of doing that
Definitely.
Well, what this movie gets right, though, is like the great submarine movies. If you look at like The Hunt for Red October or Run Silent, Run Deep with Clark Gable and Burt Lancaster or Das Boot, which is probably, arguably the greatest submarine movie ever made. Those movies embrace the claustrophobia of those confined spaces. Mm-hmm. They don't look big. They don't look broad. They don't look gigantic. They are in the minutiae of that little sardine can. Mm-hmm. And so you feel the pressure coming down. And director Kevin MacDonald, he just lives and breathes that. And visually, the movie is stunning and just really goes for broke in that regard.
Right. And I felt the scripting of it was diabolically simple, but also impacting in the fact that some instances we see action films where it's car chase, car chase, car chase, car chase, car chase, to the next car chase, to the next car chase. And in this case, what we're getting is we're getting problem, solution, but that solution creates three more problems that we've got to fix.
Yeah.
And then now we got to, so it's this constant spreading. It's this wildfire effect that this cause, impact, cause, result, you're never getting off the merry-go-round, and it's so effective. I felt that it really drives the film.
But then you throw on top of that the movie's main twist, which is sort of, not to ruin anything, but if you've ever seen The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, that is essentially what this movie is. So if you think of who Humphrey Bogart was in that film and how he starts out as this awesome, good, upright man, and what the pursuit of gold does to him... Mm. That is what happens to the characters in this submarine.
Is there enough new here? Just because, I mean, I know there's a lot of comparisons, but not that if you've seen one submarine movie, you've seen them all. That's definitely not the case.
Right.
But from the description, it's kind of claustrophobia. You know, this is what all submarine movies did. Even Down Periscope with Kelsey Grammer had oh no.
It is a B movie.
It's a B movie. Yeah.
It is a B thriller. It doesn't aspire to be more than the sum of its parts. director Kevin MacDonald just has oiled those parts really well.
The attention to detail I thought was really good. Again, the supporting cast is so good. I would have loved to see a little bit more with them, but other than that, I mean, I thought it was a fun ride. Reminded me of City Slickers meets Das Boot.
Oh, excellent. So, okay, if we're all comparing notes on this, Sarah, see it in the theater, rent it, skip it.
Theater.
Brian, the movie guy?
Theater.
And I'm saying theater as well. So that is three theaters from the Squabblers. Okay, on to 2 days, one night. Brian Zitzelman, you had a chance to see this. Tell us a little bit about it.
I am. It's the new film from the Dardenne brothers, Jean-Pierre and Luc. They're pretty popular amongst people who are kind of more cinephiles. They haven't quite crossed over. They're probably never going to be honest. They've won a couple of Cannes Film Festival big prizes. And the thing that's gotten a little more attention lately is that Marion Cotillard, who does not get nominated for an Academy Award every year, despite what people say, it's only happened twice now. She got nominated for an Oscar for lead actress for this. She plays the lead character, Sandra, who's coming back to work and finds out that her job's basically been nixed. The foreman has told Sandra that basically her job has been gotten rid of via vote. They have said that we can do your hours, we can split those up with the other people. And if the other people do your job and decide to vote you out, they get a bonus, or they can keep you and not get a bonus. And it really relates to the tough economic times that not just the U.S. is going through, but Europe, and puts a very particular pin in that. I know, Sarah, you saw the movie. You're a big Dardenne fan, too. What did you think? Cotillard deserves a nomination?
I do. I mean, she's magnificent in the movie. I do think if you look at the Dardenne brother films, it is lesser Dardenne.
You say this all the time.
I do say this all the time.
Every Dardenne film to you is a lesser Dardenne.
No.
What are the... What are
yeah, but if you look at like Rosetta and La Promise, we're talking two of the greatest films arguably made in the last half century. So
you know,
that
you know,
does...
I'm all for The Sun. The Sun's probably my favorite movie the past 15 years.
So when I say lesser Dardenne in regards to 2 Days, One Night...
You're grading on a
that
curve.
That still it's makes it curve. One of the better films playing right now. Cotillard is amazing. She's in virtually every shot. She dominates the film, and she does so much without speaking. It's unreal.
The Dardennes definitely go for this kind of hyper-realism where the cinematography just follows the person around. I know, Brian, you haven't seen this movie. Dardennes haven't really been up to your...
Did they do Moneyball? I like that movie.
I think maybe their Moneyball would have been a little sadder. And I guess that's the
A little?
The misunderstanding, though, is that their films definitely have a sadness, but there's always a serenity to them. They always have... Maybe not like a religious element, but there's always a moment of revelation where the characters go through something and everything, at least briefly, or at the end, everything starts to work out for the better.
Well, Brian Z, and I know you are a huge Dardenne Brothers fan. I mean, gigantic, the biggest one that I know. But I think with this and The Kid with the Bike, I think even you would have to admit, are they getting lighter? Are they starting to?
Kid with the Bike was definitely lighter. I mean, it was basically the whole concept is about someone being good and wanting to take over the care of a little child just out of the goodness of her heart. I mean, I wouldn't call this one light because, you know, the main character still, you know,
but
goes through some serious troubles, but it does kind of look for the humanity in other people. Like she goes, the movie's very simple. She goes door to door of the people who voted her out and say, can you vote me to have my job back? I know it means you lose your bonus. Maybe you can't pay for vacation, a new car, something for your kids, whatever. But can you do this? And I've heard some people say it's repetitive in that manner, but it brings out the humanity of everybody. You know, you see people who decide to make big life decisions, and you see how great a person can be. And when they do something bad, this is not a movie that paints big villains. The people aren't, I hate you, you're a horrible person, go away, I want you to die. It's, I need this money. My kid's going off to college, or I can't vote for you because I'm the newest one on the job. The foreman will be mad at me. He will fire me. And it, because it brings that humanity, it brings that kind of feel of what people have to actually go through to get by in life. It has, like you said, there's the warmth that maybe you don't find in all their movies, but I think all their movies, other than maybe La Promise and Rosetta, do have a moment where you just have the nice warm and fuzzies.
Okay, so 2 days, one night. Brian?
100% theater. Theater.
And Sarah?
Theater. I mean, with minor reservations.
With a question mark at the end.
Theater. Me.
Dot.
Okay. So of the two of us that have seen it, you're both saying theater. That's what counts at this point.
We are both saying Marion Cotillard deserves that Oscar nomination. For people that are poo-pooing that, oh my goodness,
no poo-poo.
She could win in my book.
It was in my top 10.
Okay, fair enough. Now, moving right along, we have a special guest.
Mystery guest
revealed.
Mystery guest.
Joining us from shouldiseeit.net, not .com, that's shouldiseeit.net, Mike Ward.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Mike,
hey,
how you doing?
Hello
you
there.
Welcome. I'm up for a squabble. How's it going?
Yeah.
Well, wait, .net, what the heck's up with that?
Yeah, so that's a fight I'm not up to taking, but .com, as of 5.5 years ago, all the way up to about a couple of months ago, is owned by somebody in Paraguay who's, what do they call it, parked the site.
Oh, they're just sitting on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and they want some exorbitant fee that's got way too many numbers to the left of a decimal. So
oh,
I'm just like...
What is it with you and Brian Z losing your websites to
Brian
foreign
T. Brian
powers?
Brian the movie guy.
Brian the movie guy. I'm sorry, yeah. Brian the movie guy.
Well, mine makes sense.
Send them some green cards or cash, payday bars, whatchamacallit, something.
Yeah, I don't know that Mr. Bribe Paraguay is going to be up for the payment plan. I think he's thinking he's on a gold mine.
Yeah.
So
Mike, you are here with us tonight also because of the fact that you've put this together, the Seattle Film Awards, and tee it up for us. Tell us a little bit about what's going on here.
Well, sure. So this would be the second time that we've, or that I've kind of polled a number of the Seattle film critics into determining what their favorite films of the year are in a number of categories. You know, we don't have a Seattle Film Critics Society.
Which is just strange.
And, you know, from 2002 to 2004, the Seattle Film Critics Society that was in place at that time did have a Seattle Film Awards. And there were, you know, press releases, things like that.
So what happened? Did you ever figure out why we don't have a Seattle Film Awards? What happened in 2005 that it disappeared?
I blame it on Crash.
Yes.
Yeah. The movie Crash, yes. Yeah.
I'm working on that, Sarah. So what I've discovered is that in talking with some of the folks that were involved around that time, it came obviously from a great place. A city's film critic society, if it's stable and if the infrastructure sound can draw you attention from, you know, film studios, publicists nationwide, you get screenings, things like that. I mean, it also allows your community to have exposure, right? So that was the idea, and the infrastructure was sound. And then somewhere along the way, some people had their feathers ruffled, I guess I'll say. People were going around the society to contact publicists and said, you know, I can't see X on this date, so since I'm in this society, book me a screening so I can see your movie. You know, and
this sounds like a terrible Dan Brown book.
Sure.
Where's the Illuminati?
Wait, are there other books by Dan Brown that aren't terrible?
They're okay, page turner.
Now hold on.
Yeah. Here we go.
I wasn't prepared for book squabble.
Oh, sorry. We'll get back to cinema squabbling.
Film
and also, critics get bitchy too, don't they, when they don't get their screenings and
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Don't we?
Show
don't
me
you?
Selma.
A little bit. I mean, I may have fired an email off at one point to ask, why can't we see? And that's 10 of the tone of my email.
Right. Wait, timid. Oh, are you talking about Selma?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. I don't know. Maybe a little Selma.
So there's kind of a weird hierarchy to movie critics, probably across the land, particularly in Seattle, where there's a thing called the BFCA, the Broadcast Film Critics Association.
Mm-hmm. Of which there's like six people.
Right. And they get to see stuff kind of sneaky.
One
inside.
Of which
you go like, Brian T will come out of a movie and be like, hey, I'm the movie guy. I got to see this early. I've got my little gold yeah. star on my website.
I just pointed
not
my face.
Not BrianTheMovieGuy.com. So there's certain awards I know that when it came to voting for this that, you know, Brian got to see that the rest
sure.
of us didn't. So it does have that kind of goofy hierarchy.
And I flaunted in all your faces.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Right.
It's very nice.
You're right. But to kind of to break the pyramid down a little bit, so there's that level, and then there's kind of the next level, which is where the majority of us are all, where we all kind of, we're a part of this, we get the screenings, but then there's the whole other level, which is more so the public that comes out to a lot of the screenings, and they
right.
often...
Babushka lady.
And they often, right, and they often yeah. get, which...
Sam Kennison.
So, but, and about this for just a second, the public gets to come out to these screenings, so there are often 5 or 6 screenings that we, as critics, never hear about, so
right.
these things are
mm-hmm.
out in public.
Well, and exhibitors get special screenings too, right?
Right.
The theater
mm-hmm.
managers
right.
and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, so... And there could be, and Sarah, you and I have talked about this for years, there could be a whole documentary put together about some of these individuals who come out to some of these screeners.
Please.
There are some, yeah. there is rich territory there for mining.
Well, so. And Adam and I, we've kind of given it a tentative title called Cinema Rats, and we actually don't mean that in a derogative way.
It's not a bad way. It's not
okay.
But
I tend to use the term returning champions.
Returning champions. There you go.
Some of these individuals will stand in line for hours to see Black Hat. You know, I mean, they will get there at 3 o'clock.
A smart decision. A solid.
No, there's one woman in particular who has been doing this for 2 decades. And she shows up for some screenings at 7 o'clock in the morning at Pacific Place, sits in a chair, and is there all day. Yeah. And then when she comes into the theater, she insists that she gets to sit in the exact middle.
Yes, I know.
And sometimes she will even ask the press people if other press people are coming so she can have the seat next to you, which is always
That's a fun one. You know, sometimes they give away stuff at these screenings too. They give posters or stuff like that. I think my favorite giveaway was Fast and Furious. Which one was that?
Fast Five.
Where they gave away air fresheners.
Which were used. They were used.
We needed those.
I borrowed a few around me, and I said I just tied them to the railing in front of me, just in case.
Pardon my laughter, but I sat next to you during that.
I had it all figured out.
That was a night I will never forget.
Yeah.
You know what? But we have smell of butter and BO in the evening.
So we have no Film Critics Society.
Okay.
So you've done some film awards. We should probably talk about those, Mike.
Were any Cinerats invited to be voters?
I didn't have any of the emails, unfortunately. So when I put this together the year, you know, 2 years ago, I had no idea how big or how small to make it. And so I tend to love film. And so I tend to be kind of an awards junkie. So I kind of shot big and I came up with 21 categories, because who has, you know, time to go through 21 categories?
What, do you have kids?
We don't have time to go through 21 categories right now.
No, we're not going to do that.
Okay.
However, you know, what ends up coming through is, so last year I invited between, I forget the number, it was 17 or 18 folks to take part, and had nearly everybody go through the nomination process and then select the winners. And of course, more people selected the winners than the nominations, and that's totally fine. This year, just due to some transition and whatnot, invited 15 people to take part, had 14 take part in the nomination process, and 15 people take part in the winners voting. So everybody took part. And, you know, along the way, it was interesting to see the selections, you know, pre-Oscar nomination time, which is when we do this, voting starts at the end of December. Cuts off around the first week or so of January, and then the winners voting takes place, and we announce the winners the day before the Oscar nominations come out, so to kind of play off that momentum. And what's interesting, now that we've had these Oscar nominations come out and kind of the shell shock of some of those selections and who was snubbed and who's not there, 9 of the winners that were selected by our Seattle film community weren't even Oscar nominated in those categories.
No kidding. Wow.
So, you know, for instance, if you look at Best Supporting Actress, Jessica Chastain received the vote in Seattle for a Most Violent Year, and she did not get nominated for an Oscar. Same with Jake Gyllenhaal, who was named the Best Actor in Seattle, and he was left home Oscar morning. So it's interesting to see how some of this played out.
I think it's really fascinating that Best Actor category in Seattle. We've got 3 of the 5 nominees aren't up for Oscar.
That's right.
Including the winner.
That's correct. So Ralph Fiennes got in for the Grand Budapest Hotel. Of course, Gyllenhaal, who ended up winning. And then I was thrilled to see votes coming in as I'm tabulating these nomination ballots and seeing that Tom Hardy in Locke, a film that I know you guys talked about in your first episode, he coasted through to a nomination. And I thought people forgot about Locke because as you can attest, Brian, movie guy getting Oscar screeners and whatnot, the studio forgot they had Locke for the most part. So to see him sustain and carry through the year, it's wonderful because it's a tremendous performance
and
from a great actor.
Other interesting thing about that same category, Best Actor, is the 2 that were nominated are both the front runners, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Michael Keaton and Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah. Which does tell you how good they both are, I think.
I think they're prepping for their sort of steel cage match for Oscar.
Yes.
Yeah. As we'll talk about Eddie Redmayne.
And so, and that brings us. So that's Best Actor, Jake Gyllenhaal getting Best Actor, Best Actress, Mentioning the names here are some of the names we've also been tossing around the table,
right.
Like Marianne Cotillard for 2 days, one night.
Right.
Felicity Jones, Theory of Everything, nominee. Julianne Moore, Still Alice. Rosamund Pike, Gone Girl. And Jenny Slate from Obvious Child. These are all names that we've kind of been kicking around here for a while.
Right.
And Rosamund Pike takes it for Gone Girl.
She did. And, I mean, I don't have the exact voting numbers, but it was in a walk. I mean, almost unanimous,
really?
Rosamund Pike got the win. The nomination process was tighter. There was these five were really the cream that rose to the top.
Mm-hmm. I voted for Jenny Slate.
I may have voted for Jenny Slate, too. I've seen Obvious Child, by the way, twice now, and that movie just soars.
You it's voted such for, a great movie. Or you chose to nominate? We only get a pick. No, we do. Do we pick five?
We pick five to nominate.
You pick a full five categories.
Yeah, yeah. You go one through five.
I voted for Jenny Slate.
I don't even remember who I voted for.
And can I also say for Best Supporting Actress how refreshing it is to not see Patricia Arquette win something for Boyhood?
This would be the only city she lost in.
So for keen ears, we closed last week's show talking about the SAGs with the Patricia Arquette getting picked as our prediction for the winner. And Brian just throwing the bomb down, just going, Patricia Arquette.
Yeah. Just pull the pin and throw it in the middle of the table. Yeah,
we ran out of time.
Let's dig into this a little bit because I know this is kind of divisive amongst the crew.
So that's fair.
So Best Supporting Actress. Let's just rattle off who is on the list here.
Sure. So Patricia Arquette was nominated. So was Jessica Chastain, who eventually won for Most Violent Year. Renee Russo got in for Nightcrawler, and then Emma Stone for Birdman, and then a nice surprise. Tilda Swinton gets in for Snowpiercer.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
Another film, Hamming incidentally, that the Weinstein Company, who had the film, if you went to their awards site, because these movie studios put up their FYC for your consideration sites, right? if you go to the TYC or TWC, excuse me, site, they've got all the Weinstein Company films there. The one film they don't have anywhere on their awards site is Snowpiercer.
No kidding.
And I think that stems from, and I think, Sarah, you know about this, that there was a huge dispute, right, between the director and the Weinsteins and the whole like final cut
just
of the
Harvey.
Film.
Just Harvey.
Just Harvey, right. Okay, so Harvey Weinstein and the producers, and they just didn't want Snowpiercer.
Nobody famous is in that movie, Mike.
No at all.
Chris somebody.
Captain America.
Captain America or
Captain
somebody?
America.
I don't know.
Never heard of him.
But you know, Seattle nominated Snowpiercer five times.
So Marvel's Snowpiercer.
Take that, Harvey Weinstein.
No. And would have made more money.
And then obviously taking that is then Jessica Chastain. So,
right.
Yeah. And while we're in it here, so since we've got kind of the tops here,
sure.
Why don't we also look at Best Director and Best Picture of the
year? We can go through those. The director nominations match Oscar. The three of the five nominees were pre-nominated here in Seattle. Wes Anderson, Grand Budapest Hotel. Alejandro Iñárritu, if I'm saying that correctly, for Birdman.
I think so. Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you. And Richard Linklater for Boyhood. Those are the three that went on to Oscar. Joining them in the Seattle nominations were Damien Chazelle for Whiplash and David Fincher for Gone Girl. And Richard Linklater was Boyhood's lone win in the Seattle film community for Best Director.
Interesting. Did not get my vote on that one.
Nor mine.
Got mine.
Not mine.
I want to say that the voting was close on the winner, but the nomination, he had no trouble getting nominated. So. Yeah.
You fixed it, right?
Well,
no.
So okay. What do we think? I think the getting nominated thing is interesting.
Who like even are you right now?
But I come back to Boyhood, and I still like Boyhood, but I'm kind of... Here was the question that was posed to me about Boyhood and Linklater, because I think he's written a great script and all this. Here's what makes it different, which is if we were to take the same film and we were to cast actors, different actors for each of the ages, instead of using the same cast for 12 years, and they shot this like you would do a regular film, they shoot it in 3 months or 30 days or something, would this film still be as good in our minds? And you're saying, Sarah,
without
you're saying
a doubt, yes.
See, and I don't think so.
Oh, I totally think so.
I think
Brian thinks yes, because then you get Patricia Arquette out of
get her out of
right away.
I mean, they would just use
give her the
age.
Oscar.
They would just use old age makeup, and then she would really win the Oscar.
Yes, that's right.
That's interesting. I had never heard anyone actually bring that up. I mean, I really changed my tune on Boyhood just a couple weeks ago because I was pretty lukewarm on it when I first saw it. Felt really crazy. I remember calling Mike after he finally saw it. I'm like, am I crazy for having any issues with this movie? Because like the Metacritic score at the time was, and I think still is, a perfect 100. Mm-hmm. That means not just 100% of critics gave it a good rating, 100% of critics gave it their full, most positive rating. Mm-hmm. And I rewatched it recently on DVD, and it did work a lot better for me. I don't know if it's just the rhythm. Not convenient. I mean, hey, I've had a lot of issues lately with directors. I really like getting awards for movies I wasn't as crazy for, like for right. Gravity. You know, I'm a big Cuarón fan, and I don't really think much of that. But I do think Linklater deserves it. And if you cast different people every year, I think that's too sight unseen. You really can't judge. But I think the writing's solid enough. I think the directing's solid enough. I think it's funny. And the kid gets to be a better actor as he goes along. So as long as we're kind of going with the idea that, you know, the acting for the most part is still solid, I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Well, and you gotta remember, the movie is about, it's a coming of age story that's about the moments between the moments. This isn't a movie that is about the stuff that we've seen in every other coming of age film. This isn't about the first kiss. This isn't about, you know, the first time you have sex. This isn't about, you know, the teacher giving the inspirational speech and then you go out and do something awesome.
Some of that stuff in it's, it though.
Not, but it has the aftermath and it has the before. It doesn't give you the stuff you've seen. Right. It lets you act that stuff.
I don't quite
for
agree
yourself.
With that.
But. It amplifies the pregnant pauses in life that
exactly.
movies skirt over all the time.
And exactly.
One of the criticisms of the film, and I don't want to speak for you, Mr. Movie Guy.
I've got many criticisms.
I know
go
you
ahead.
But one of the criticisms of the film of people I've recommended it to, and I'm a massive fan of the film, but is, so? Mm-hmm. And I think that simple response speaks to what the intent of the film was, which is, like Sarah's talking about, there's 1,000 movies that cover this territory and make build to these enigmatic, maybe sometimes even false moments that we're supposed to galvanize behind. This movie simply is linking dot to dot to dot to dot to see where you start and where you end up. And it's just this one story, this one chapter book of a life with a few incidentals thrown in, and the characters all individually kind of moving through, trying to figure out how they're going to get to those same places. And it's, in that regard, it's unique. And I think it's quite beautiful in what it accomplishes.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. I think it's still a wonderful film. I just think it's a gimmick.
It's a total gimmick.
Yeah.
So. It is a total gimmick.
Okay.
Just like
not
Before Sunset and Sunrise, there's a gimmick there too, right?
That's,
I mean, you're trying to build... It's
know.
A gimmick,
gimmick,
but you can build it out. And he did it with Sunrise and Sunset and Midnight, which is all three wonderful movies.
Thrown down as indie cred, right?
Right, so, yeah, see? Yeah.
But let me ask you one quick
you're
question.
Yeah.
I don't
want to
belabor
yeah.
this, but... Is there a softer word than gimmick? Because gimmick has a negative connotation. And I agree with you that...
Well, I need it to be a negative connotation because I hated the movie.
I know. but I hear that all the time, that it's, oh, it's just a gimmick. Oh, it's just him screwing around for 2 weeks a year for 12 years. It's so much more than that, though. I mean, his intention was not, I'm just going to sit here for, you know, a couple weeks, blow some money, get some people together. Right. We're just going to have some fun for 12 years. You know, that's not the intention of the Before trilogy either.
Right.
Gimmick is a harsh way to look at the film if you look at the intent of what he's attempting to do. I can't find a softer word that amplifies it correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I would use gimmick for the Sunset trilogy, right? Or the Before trilogy.
How about conceit?
But I just, my whole thing it worked there, right? I mean, he had the dialogue,
the Before
acting,
movies are fantastic.
Just phenomenal stuff, and really digs into relationships and what it's like to be together and apart and all that stuff. And this movie, for me, I my parents were divorced. I lived a lot of the conceits in this movie, and none of them rung true for me. Everyone says Patricia Arquette, oh, she's so good. No other actress would do that. She's a brave actress, but she's not a good actress in this movie. I know I'm on an island. But she's jarringly bad in some scenes. And I can't believe that other people can't.
And what's amazing to me is she has the one scene that consistently brings me to tears.
Yeah. Okay.
So. I got brought to tears.
So yeah. For different reasons. Talking best picture of the year, this is kind of the big one here that we've been discussing.
Right. So we nominate 10. Mm-hmm. We don't do the maybe 5, maybe 7, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody lists their top 10, and then it's just a preferential system. And so the 10 nominees were Birdman, Boyhood, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Fury, Gone Girl, The Grand Budapest Hotel, A Most Violent Year, Nightcrawler, Under the Skin, and Whiplash.
Wow. Okay.
Some good flicks.
And these are all solid ones. We brought them up last week as well.
Yeah.
So these, I think we didn't miss anything here.
It's a pretty solid list, top to bottom. Yeah, absolutely.
And taking the number one slot being?
With its fifth win in the Seattle Film Awards, Birdman takes Best Picture.
There you go.
So there you go. Yeah.
And I think we all came to a general consensus on that as to where that's coming
collectively
from.
Yeah, I think so.
There are some snubs on this list though. This was one of the things we were talking about before we started recording though, when we get into American Sniper and into Selma as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were talking about earlier with the BFCA. I mean, there's certain movies that just don't get shown here. Most of us did not see Selma beforehand. Most of us did not get to see American Sniper. I don't know how much both of those films would have been there, but I'm sure one, if not...
Selma would have for sure been there, I think.
I think so. Selma did land a nomination for its song, and I think the song was released late November, early December, and I think enough people put it in their nomination ballot that they must have heard it. And I, you know, it wasn't a quick, you know, it was a decision I had to make of, we haven't seen the film yet. It's going to open somewhere, you know, it's going to open in four main cities. And so I included the song because it got enough votes, but it's kind of an anomaly that the song is there and nothing else is, but it speaks to what you guys are talking about.
And I had to, being part of the BFCA, I had to, and I did get to see the movie ahead of time, but I had to go onto their website. Mm-hmm. There's a talkback section, right, where they track stuff and, oh, we got these screeners and those screeners. I probably 10 days after somebody had received a online link is when I just happened to be reading that. And they said, yeah, call this guy and you can get it. So that's how I find it. And I watch it on my iPad. I mean, they did a really bad job of getting that in front of people, which is a shame because it's a wonderful movie.
All right, now we're talking American Sniper. This has been sort of a controversial film that we've had amongst the group as well. Sarah, you want to take the lead on this for a second?
Well, I think the interesting thing with Sniper, with American Sniper, is just the stupendous box office results that it's had these last 2 weeks. It's made over $200 million in 2 weeks for a polarizing Iraq war film.
Mm-hmm. In January.
In January. Thank you, Brian. You know, we're talking a movie here that looks at PTSD. It looks at the home front. It looks on the war's effects on a human being, on a soldier, on a very intimate level. And yet we have people from the right, from the left, embracing it for different reasons. We have people on the right and the left hating it for different reasons.
Are there people on the left embracing it?
There are some, yes.
Okay.
No, there's... Okay. There have been quite a few.
Okay.
One of them is sitting at this table. I think his name is the movie guy. But the reactions have been so extreme, and it's just been fascinating to look at. And I think Mike had some very visceral reactions to the film.
Mr. Eastwood.
Oh, I don't know that I want to have words with Mr. Eastwood. American Sniper is, in many ways... fine. It's technically proficient, okay? I mean, in terms of Eastwood's sort of recent canon, it's, you know, the craftsmanship, the below-the-line work, it's the best-looking Eastwood movie in a really long time. Mm-hmm. And Bradley Cooper finds an octave that I don't know a lot of us knew he had, right? I think we'd all agree he's pretty outstanding in this movie.
Fantastic.
And it's hard to make a case that he's not, that he shouldn't be an Oscar nominee.
It's his best performance ever.
Yeah, I certainly a gear I didn't necessarily think he could hit, and he is in almost every scene, and he carries this thing on his back.
But I think your issues are with the relationship between Bradley Cooper's Kyle and Sienna Miller's Taya.
In fact, I would even go so far as to say that my number one problem with the film is the script, and I'm baffled it's Oscar nominated because I think elements of it feel irresponsible.
I want you to explain
and
that, though.
To that extent, I think what we have is a movie that lives in a time and an era that we were all rah-rah, war, we're going to get the bad guys, we're going to go do this. And we now have history since that time. So you've got all of this time that has passed where we're looking at the situation he's in, the war that he fought, then him coming home and having a war at home and having his wife, who is obviously trying to keep the family together, who is attempting to he's vacant and he's not there, and then all she does in almost all of those scenes is just get angry with him.
Your
antagonize
is that she
him.
Comes across
right.
as
but
kind
Mike,
of shrewish.
So, I think you said in your review that you find it disrespectful, and that was what I had an issue with.
Right.
You're saying that her character is disrespectful to those on the home front, and my sister was in Iraq.
Sure.
She was over there for two tours.
Yeah.
Her life was in danger.
Of course.
And as much as I have some reservations with this film, as far as how it juxtaposes the life in Iraq
right.
to the life at home, I'm 100% thankful that people like Chris Kyle were in Iraq looking over my sister's life.
Sure, and that's not my issue.
No, but I did talk to my sister. I didn't want her to go back there. I didn't want her to go for another tour. Am I disrespecting her by wanting that?
But there's a difference. I mean,
let me make a distinction, because the film only gives you that small window. The conversations that you're having with your sister are much more grand.
So I would disagree. Then the first tours, she's supporting him going there. She's saying he should be fighting. It's not until he goes back for tours three and tour four, mm-hmm. when she sees the emotional toll that this is taking place.
More distant, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she sees what is happening to him. That is when she starts telling him, I really don't want you to go there again. We might not be here. And I think that is a completely honest and justified response. You see what is happening to your husband, and it is destroying your family. And it's not. And it's not until the later tours that this takes place. So how is that disrespectful?
My issue is not that those conversations are in the film. They absolutely need to be in the film, because that is accurate to what happened. Those are the conversations you had that many of us that had people over there had. The problem is the film frames her in those later scenes, if you want to talk about those later scenes, as something what I felt was antagonistic, because all you see is the repetitiveness of those comments again and again and again. And he is zoning out, and it's just firing all around him. And it's very surface level, because you know what she's doing while he's gone is she's holding that house together. She's helping other people.
And wouldn't that be a different movie?
It wouldn't be a different movie, because you know what? They put her in the center of the film. They make, in those scenes, they make her crucial to the situation. Why do her the disservice then? Why only give her that one note to play when she is actually doing so much more? That's where the disrespect comes in, because is it Taya? Kyle?
Taya, yes. Yeah, okay. I think you make some valid points. I think those are all points that we should be thinking about and talking about. I just respectfully disagree.
Adam? Okay, yeah. So going around the table here real quick, theater, rent, or skip on American Sniper? I think are we all there?
Is there
sure, let's do it real quick.
Yet, okay.
Right. Well,
Sarah?
Theater.
Brian. Theater. Rent.
Rent. Brian?
Rent.
And I'm going to say theater. I think it's that good. So, all right. So, recapping on this week's films, Still Alice, we had two rentals, one theater. Mike, what's your say on this?
For which film?
For Still Alice?
Still Alice, I would say Rent.
Rent on that. Okay, so split on that.
You're all killing me.
Black Sea, we had three theaters of those of us. Mike, were you there? Did you get a chance to see it?
Would theater.
You, theater as well on that. And 2 days, one night, we said were two theaters as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Better be.
It better be. Because only two people saw it.
It's the movie of the week.
Okay.
Yeah,
movie of the week. I don't know. We'll have to see about that. I think Black Sea wins just purely out of the fact that we have more votes on that. Coming up for our next episode, we'll be talking about 50 Shades of Grey, perhaps The Kingsman, Jupiter Ascending, and also talking Oscars, I believe. So we'll be getting to all of
has
that.
Has anyone seen 50 Shades? Has anyone read?
Yes, I have read it.
So I'm just curious to see where they're going to be coming in.
We'll dig into all of these meatier topics as well. And again, Brian the Movie Guy, thank you very much. Brian Zitzelman, Sarah Michelle Fetters, Mike Ward from ShouldISeeIt.net. I'm Adam Gerke. Thank you very much also to Sprints Arbogast, our producer for this evening and the show. And also thanks to Squawking Vulture Studios for all the post-production necessary here as well. We'll catch you guys next time.